Okay, well, I'd like to say hello to everybody, and thank you for joining us for today's CIDR presentation. Before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that all CIDR sessions are recorded, as this one is now, and available from the CIDR site. So if you'd like to go back and review the session or know of a colleague who wanted to attend today but wasn't able, I'll post the link right away to the recordings in the text box so you can pass it on. And we'll also have the PowerPoint presentation there to look over if you want. There's the link. During the session, our presenters will be stopping periodically to invite discussion, and at that time, we encourage you to click on the microphone in the bottom left corner of the screen to voice your comments or questions. Just please remember to click on the microphone icon again when you're finished talking, because this allows someone else to use it, as we've got it set up to only allow one speaker at a time. If you don't have audio capabilities today, you can use the text box at any time to post comments or questions. Now I'd like to introduce today's presenters. We have Dr. Janet Gruen, Janet Twork, and Maria Seuss-Gonzalez. Janet Twork is going to be presenting first, as she's got another engagement that she has to go to. So I'm going to introduce her first. Janet is the team lead for the e-learning team in the undergraduate medical education program in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Calgary. Janet started her education career teaching high school science. And in 2007, while working on her Master of Science in Educational Technology at the University of Calgary, she provided technical support to the distance education program in the Faculty of Education, and that's where she met and began working with Maria Seuss and Dr. Janet Gruen. Dr. Janet Gruen is the graduate coordinator and an associate professor in workplace and adult learning with the Faculty of Education at the University of Calgary. Her research interests include non-traditional adults and their access to learning, organizational theory, spirituality in formal and informal learning contexts, transformational learning, and, of course, online learning. Maria Seuss-Gonzalez is the acting program officer in the Graduate Division of Educational Research in the Faculty of Education at the University of Calgary. And until recently, she worked as the program coordinator for distance delivery and as a program administrator in the same division. She moved into these administrative roles with a background in counseling and teaching. Prior to settling in Canada, she worked as a school psychologist and a college instructor. And I want to thank all of these ladies for, as I mentioned, coordinating your schedules and the presentation so that you could all be present here today. And in order for that to happen, I am going to turn over the microphone right away and let you get started.
Well, thank you, Lynn, for that fine introduction. This is Janet Twork speaking, and I'd like to talk about, or I'll start today talking about the introduction of our paper. We came across a quote by Wheatley, and this really fits the fundamental point of view that we have here, that when you're doing an online program, all the parts are greater when you think of them together. And so this quote, I'd really like you to take from it the notion that if we view an online learning program as a system, you start seeing a landscape of connections that is much richer than the individual components. So today in our paper, what we'd like to do is quickly talk about those four key areas of online learning and take you through the objectives and methodology that we had in our paper. We'd like to talk about the personal narratives that we had and how we use that as research data. And then we'll take you into the results that we used and how we came across those results or came about those results, but through thematic analysis. We then link the data to a theoretical framework, and we'll talk about the implications and recommendations we have for online learning programs. Now, if there's one take-home message from our presentation, from our paper, it's this. If you run an online learning program, people cannot operate in silos. You really need to have an interconnected system where everyone is talking to everyone else. More than that, we need to be aware that every component feeds into every other component. So we came up with this little diagram, and I'll start on the left-hand side, top left, program administration. This is really the people who provide the foundation, direction, and the scaffold structure for the program. moving over to the top right-hand side, we have the course instructors. And these are the people, of course, who run the courses. But they're building around the scaffold that we've created electronically. And they put together those walls and rooms and safe places for learning and growth and expression for the students. Now, the students come into the system. They use the spaces, but they build further into these spaces. Their knowledge and expertise further fuels the conversation with the instructors, with program administration, and with technical support about how to make the program even better. Last but not least, moving to the bottom left-hand corner is technical support, which really you can't run a program without these fine folks, and is the tech support that brings the program to life and maintains the scaffold and makes sure everybody is empowered to do what they need to do. So as you look at this graphic, we're hoping you can imagine a set of arrows interconnecting each of the four components. And when you have program administration, course instructors, students, and tech support all talking to each other and feeding back into the system, you get a beautiful system of online learning. Now, the objectives in our study was to, first and foremost, really understand an online graduate program from several different perspectives, the program administration, the technical support, the instructor, and the student. Second, we really wanted to reveal how these components of the system are really intertwined. If you're going to make an effective, multifaceted distance delivery program, you really need to understand what each other is doing. Lastly, we wanted to understand the student-centered criteria, and that has been the hallmark of success for our program, and to understand that in the context of how the four areas, program administration, technical support, instructor, and student, feed into a student-centered system. So how we went about doing this? Well, it turns out that Maria, Janet G, and myself had worked together in the online program, and we got together and talked about what it is that we each did. We first started talking about this just over coffee one day, and then we got online onto Illuminate, and we actually recorded each other talking about our experiences and what we fed into the system and what we got out of the system. And then we also wrote down some personal reflection narratives. And then we analyzed what we had talked about online. We listened to our recording again, and we looked at our personal narratives again. And from there, several themes arose. Now, I'm first going to talk about the two components that I participated in. While I did my master's program, I was not only an online student, but I was also technical support. So from the technical support perspective, there are several characteristics that you totally need in a tech support person. You need them to know the system inside and out. They have to know all the quick and fast ways of solving people's problems. But more than that, they need to not just be competent with the technology. They need to be very, very good listeners, very good discerners, and very good speakers. Clear communication is important. It's one thing to say, well, click on this icon and speak again. It's another thing to say, to speak on the microphone, you need to move your mouse to the bottom left-hand corner of Illuminate. There you'll see a microphone icon. Please click on that and begin speaking. When you're done speaking, please click on it to release the microphone for others. So obviously, communication skills are very important, especially when troubleshooting. The other challenge that myself and my co-technical support person had was that as master's students in an educational technology program, we knew a lot of the theory and the practice of online learning. And so it was very difficult for us to be in and out of all these different classrooms across the curriculum in our graduate program, which, by the way, wasn't restricted just to ed tech students. We have a very rich online program here at Calgary in multiple disciplines. But Sean, my fellow technical support person, and I, knowing good pedagogy and good online learning practice and whatnot, had a fine balance between being good tech support and supporting faculty and giving them tips and feedback versus not maybe oppressing them with our knowledge and making them to feel as if we were spying on them in their classrooms and talking about faculty development options for them that were well beyond our role as technical support. The other perspective I had was that of a student. Now, I'll admit my bias here. My master's work was on understanding the quote-unquote media generation, and so I react very strongly to the notion of there's one generation who's really good at technology. So I'd like to, knowing my bias, expand your horizons a little bit today, that what I found as a student online was definitely those people in my age group we more often than not picked up the technology and ran with it. And whether I was tech support or whether I was a student in the class, I had to appreciate that everyone coming into the online learning environment as a student had a different level of experience with the technology. So even though there was a bit of a sway that the people at the, you know, in my age group in their 20s and early 30s picked up the technology quite quickly, that wasn't a hard and fast rule. It was really based on how much exposure people had had to technology. So some students just waltzed right into Illuminate and Blackboard and picked it up, no problem. They're talking, they're scribbling, they're graffitiing, everything. Other people were more timid. They needed a few more lessons to get to know the technology. And it's really important that online learners understand what it takes to be a successful learner online. So some students, the technology was a barrier, and once they got over that, then they spent the rest of the semester trying to figure out, well, how do I make this integrate into the ways that I learn? So that motivation to study online and how you're going to get a hold of this technology and make it work for you is key. It's also very important that the students feel empowered to engage with the instructor, session facilitator, the tech support, and their colleagues online. So opening up that door just by simply saying as an instructor, hey, it's okay for you to take the mic and talk with other people or go into a breakout room, email tech support, phone tech support. Those things are all important for the student learning online. I also noticed that there was a huge difference between part-time and full-time students. Those part-time students who had full-time day jobs and families at home weren't so great overall at showing up to some of our small group sessions throughout the week to work on projects. Or they would hop onto Blackboard or even Illuminate very quickly, get the test done, and then we wouldn't hear from them again until our next meeting. So there were these definite gaps in communication, and that was fully understandable. They had very busy lives. But on the flip side, the full-time students I found, both as a technical support person, I got to see this time and time again, the dynamic between a full-time student and a part-time student, sometimes there was tension because the full-time students sort of had the attitude of, hey, you know, I'm here to learn. I'm fully dedicated to this. I really need you to be answering your email and being on Illuminate with me. I don't understand why there's such a blank or a big hole in our communication in between the times that we formally schedule. Now, as Lynn kindly mentioned, I do have another commitment today, so at this point I will bow out and pass the mic to my co-presenters. Thank you very much for your time, and if anyone has questions about my specific part of the presentation, you're welcome to email me at jktworek@ucalgary.ca. I'll also type that into the text messaging board.
Thank you, Janet, and for taking time out to join us for that portion of the presentation today. We really appreciate that you had to juggle things today, and I'll let, I think it's Janet Gruen doing the next part.
No, it will be me, Maria. I am the program coordinator for distance delivery in the graduate division, and I was until very recently. And in this capacity, I have been working with instructors, faculty members, sessional instructors, about 40 to 50 different faculty members and graduate students who are enrolled in our master's and doctoral programs that we deliver online. The program coordinator, as Jen pointed out previously, provides the foundation, direction, and scaffold structure for online programs. From my personal narrative, I found that the roles and responsibilities of the administrators can be divided into two categories. As the manager of online programs, the coordinator is involved in planning and programming meetings and goes to timetabling sessions. At these assemblies, the associate dean, the program officer, the specialization coordinators, lots of faculty members work collaboratively on the schedule of courses and other programming logistics. The coordinator brings to these meetings information about student numbers, the programs and specializations, specialization requirements, program requirements, information about faculty workload, availability of instructors, and even addresses any resource and budget-related constraints. The coordinator also goes to other meetings, executive and division meetings, where important policy and programming aspects are discussed and decided about. And she works very closely with the Faculty of Grad Studies that governs all our programs, and also with the Registrar's Office. She also goes to administrative meetings, and her role is really to act as a liaison between the different departments that support all the online programs, students and instructors including, and these units and departments include the library, for example, the IT services, the teaching and learning center, and other service units on campus. Another important responsibility of the coordinator is to manage the synchronous and asynchronous delivery courses. Although the Blackboard course areas are set up by the tech support, this is done under the guidance of the program coordinator, and the synchronous sessions are very carefully scheduled to avoid conflicts and double bookings. The coordinator also monitors the quality of online course delivery by listening to the students, reading their course evaluations, and listening to instructors' feedbacks. She is expected to recommend improvements, implement changes, and propose new procedures and policies. Safeguarding of students' privacy and confidentiality is paramount in the online environment, and I'm sure everyone who works online is aware of that. As a coordinator, I feel that very strongly about safeguarding students' confidentiality and privacy. Additionally, as a mentor and mediator, the program coordinator hires the technical support team and works very closely with the members. As I said, the support goes to instructors and students, and we have over 500 graduate students currently enrolled in our various programs and specializations. The coordinator can initiate and organize professional development for faculty members and sessional instructors, and also is in charge of organizing information sessions for students in form of welcome sessions to the programs and technology orientation sessions for incoming students, and those also who may have switched from an online to the online program or an online course from the campus program. There are so many roles and responsibilities the program coordinator has that it's hard to list all of them, as the role is very multifaceted and always shifting. I would say that the program coordinator would not survive a day without the support she receives from other administrators in the office and the other stakeholders, the instructors, the students, and the technical support team. Any questions about the role of the program administrator? If not, I'll turn the slide to Janet Gruen.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Maria. And I just must say that I was in Vancouver last week and I was listening to another instructor talk about getting started in terms of online work, and it was incredible the amount of solo work that they needed to do in order to get the system up and running, and I just realized how important it is for me as an instructor to have people like Janet Torwick and Maria Seuss around, that the interdependent system is really, really huge. In terms of my role as an instructor, how I became interested in the importance of synchronous communication was when I was attending a session that Randy Garrison was giving at the Learning Center here, where he talked about the importance of the blended learning environment. And when he was speaking about this, he was talking more about the undergraduate program that we have here, where undergraduate students have a chance to attend lectures and sessions within the face-to-face environment, and then also use Blackboard. And I remember sitting there and thinking, well, what about our graduate students that don't come to campus? Do they not somehow, are they able to have the ideal components that he was talking about? And I raised my hand and I said, would you agree that the ideals of the blended learning environment could be achieved within the asynchronous Blackboard component and then the synchronous component through vehicles such as Centra and Illuminated? And he said, absolutely. And so I thought, well, that's great. And so for me, the synchronous component has been really, really important to incorporate within my Blackboard asynchronous communication here. And so when I look at this in terms of my philosophy, I believe that it really is used as a means to establish a strong sense of community amongst the learners, that it's a different way of talking and working together. And I think, especially at the beginning of the term, by having a time together where we're talking at the same time, I think you can work more rapidly in terms of building a more supportive community. So looking at the next slide then, I do have a few tips that I've got then that when I'm thinking about how I use Illuminate through a typical 13-week term, there's four principles that I really focus on in terms of designing for effective use of Illuminate sessions. And the first one is that I think there needs to be a real focused agenda for each session. And for me, I try and get those agendas out about 3 to 4 days in advance and also see if there's other things that need to be incorporated within our agenda. There needs to be a lot of planning for the sessions in advance as well, too, that people know what the outcomes are and how we're going to work together. It's important to also have interactive learning activities. So quite often there may be a small talk at the beginning, but fairly quickly we move into small group sessions, which is wonderful that you can do that on Illuminate now, where people will have things that they need to talk about and bring back to the large group. Often they have whiteboard things that they need to work on and type, and those are posted within the Blackboard session as well, too. So there's a lot of opportunity for small group work, because I find by staying in the large group session for 2 hours, it's a fairly passive learning environment where often 3 or 4 people are just talking and that's it. But by getting people in smaller groups, I find that it's a much more interactive environment. Finally, the fourth thing is that it's really critical that the Illuminate sessions are designed to be an important part of the learning agenda. For instance, when we have Illuminate sessions scheduled for a week, there's very, very little Blackboard activity, so that people realize that the major mode for communication during that week is the Illuminate session. And that what's so nice about that then is that we take a little bit of a break from the asynchronous communication and we gather together during those 2 hours, although I do have backup learning activities and opportunities for students to post if they are unable to attend the Illuminate session. I do have them positioned about one session at the beginning of the term, one or two sessions during the middle of the term, and then again at the end of the term, so that there is a nice rhythm that usually if there's about a 3 to 4 week break where people are using Blackboard, by that time they're really ready to get together and have a different pace. And this quote by Garrison and Kanuka also indicate that it's a different way of thinking, that Blackboard really has that pause and you have some time for thinking a little bit differently, but I think it's important to have that energy and enthusiasm, quick thinking that is required within the synchronous communication session. And then the final bit of advice that I'd said was that it's important to have the small group engagement and the large group dialogue as well, too. So I'm going to pass it on, but I'll just double check and see if there's any quick questions here for me as the instructor before we move on to our thematic analysis.
Janet, a question came up while you were talking from Terry Anderson there about the confusion that seems to exist with the term blended learning. And he asked, do you take it to mean blended between face-to-face and online, or blended between synchronous and asynchronous interaction?
I think at the time when I asked the question, when Randy was talking about blended learning in that presentation, he was talking about it as being face-to-face and then also the asynchronous component within Blackboard. But I think that there's been a shift now between the synchronous and the asynchronous interaction. But at that time, it just really struck me that I thought, well, the only way that he's talking about the synchronous component is when students get together face-to-face and talk in the same time zone, but now it's shifted so that synchronous, I think, is just the opportunity to talk together at the same time. And so I'm glad that there's been a shift to that in terms of the different type of conversations versus synchronous and asynchronous, and whether you're face-to-face or online, that medium isn't quite as important anymore.
Yeah, thanks for that, Janet, and also thanks, Mike, for talking about blended online learning. I guess I see that the problem with face-to-face is it's confounded. It's confounded in a number of ways with the fact that the people can talk in real time. It's confounded because they have all the body language and sort of the intimacy of being actually able to see the person and see them even when they don't want to be seen and that sort of thing. And then thirdly, it's confounded in the sense that you can can grab a hold of them afterwards, go for coffee before, all that sort of stuff. And but then that continuous or the sort of after and before is becoming more and more enabled online as well, when you talk about Twittering and all the other sorts of instant messaging and ways that presence can go on and online. So I guess I tend to agree with you, and I guess with Mike, that that the most important thing of face-to-face is real-time interaction with voice. And so that is covered in this kind of media. So to me, it takes up a big chunk of face-to-face, but there are other components that are still not there. I guess we have to decide how important those other components are pedagogically.
Well, thanks for that, Terry, and you're right. I know that there are still some things that we're missing that you do get in the face-to-face conversation in terms of that facial expression, but it's still, I'm thinking for students that are fully within a distance learning environment, such as maybe some of the students within your program and then also some of the students within our program, this is still a pretty good medium, so that the most important part is that they do get to talk. At the same time, and briefly, I just noticed that Peggy had a question. Maybe Maria can answer this in terms of what percentage of students attend the Illuminate sessions. I found for the most part I'm getting between 80 to 100% attendance. And I think one of the things that really helps out also is that the sessions are posted well in advance, and so that there's a schedule that's posted like even 2 to 3 months in advance so that students can get on and set that evening aside. So it's pretty comparable to actually when you have like a face-to-face class, you would have 80 to 100%. So, Maria, am I about right on that?
Yes, I absolutely agree with you, Janet. I think that students find this as a wonderful opportunity to connect with each other in a real time. At the beginning, we had some debate and discussion around whether the synchronous components should be mandatory or not. They did not have to regulate, but they provided with some guidelines and feedback the instructors in terms of what will happen if they force students to attend the synchronous sessions. And another shift I have been experiencing and seeing is that instructors' willingness to allow students to make a choice about attending synchronous sessions. At the beginning, we had way more synchronous sessions that maybe were necessary, and after listening to students who said, oh, we signed up for online programs and now we have to be constantly online on a weekly basis, instructors have taken that feedback into consideration, and the attendance has not changed even with those shifts. So I'm very glad to see that there are different models in terms of how instructors approach the use of synchronous components. When they feel that the attendance is crucial for the based on the course design and the course design, then they need to put that into the course outline that the attendance is mandatory. So students, when they sign up for the course, clearly know that, and they make the commitment to adhere to that. I would like to check if there are any comments or questions regarding Janet's slides, and if in a few minutes I can just move on to the next one. Okay. On the next 4 slides, I will show you the results of the thematic analysis. They analyzed the personal narratives of all 4 stakeholders, and some themes have emerged which were very interesting and very exciting for us. How I decided to present these themes is using some examples from our narratives to illuminate what is on the slides. The first theme that emerged from our stories is that it is very important to understand the functions of each subsystem and how they connect to the system. We all found that the best venue to learn from each other and learn about each other is through the professional development opportunities. In our division, the professional development sessions are open to all faculty members, administrators, technical support, and these sessions are generally facilitated by experienced online instructors from within the division. Also, technical support or the program coordinator is invited to take part or facilitate certain sessions. Through presentations and discussions, then we learn from each other how we think, how we operate, what we believe about distance learning. And this is very important because we take this information back and try to integrate into our everyday work. In addition to organized PD and workshops, I very often meet individually with instructors, especially those who are new to the faculty or who are new to online learning, to have discussions about their background, their understanding, their teaching philosophy, and their experience in the online environment. Conversation very frequently go to the direction of explaining to new faculty members and instructors what technology support does, what roles and responsibilities they have, and what the program coordinator roles are in the process. In these online sessions, it is very important to address, for example, what the different administrative processes in place, policies and procedures, resources, and available support system, and directing instructors to take advantage of these resources. Instructors, especially those who are new to online programs, very often go to their colleagues, and they are highly motivated to learn from them. The learning process and learning about each other and their and learning from their colleagues is especially relevant for them, and how they do it. They ask their colleagues to talk about their online experiences. They share course outlines. They visit each other's course sites in Blackboard, or even go to Illuminate live classes to shadow or to observe the dynamic within the classroom. Team teaching in Illuminate is another possibility that allows instructors to learn not just about their colleagues, but also about the students who are participating in different classes. And not to leave out the tech support. Tech support has direct access to Blackboard sites and is present in Illuminate classes, so they really see instructors in action, and they also learn a lot from their colleagues. And you have seen that from Janet Work's presentation, who was in her role as a student, as a full-time student, was able to learn a ton about part-time students who are studying and online, how they approach and how they manage their lives, and what kind of concepts they have in relation to the program and in relation to their work and family life compared to students who are in the campus program and working on a full-time basis. Just moving to the next slide, the other highlight of our thematic analysis was the importance of collaboration and communication amongst all aspects of the system. And when looking at the different narratives and examples, it was very interesting for me to see that these teams are actually touching on each other. They are also intertwined. They're an example that I bring up to illustrate how the system, the parts of the system learn about each other and how that takes place through effective communication. It just touches on both themes. The collaboration and communication aspect takes place in face-to-face settings, in one-on-one meetings, group meetings, and PD sessions, electronically via email and lectures. We have online orientation, information, and PD sessions. We facilitate online discussions, forums, chat rooms. There are internet cafes built into Blackboard sites to further facilitate social interaction between students. And then we have electronic resources available and hard copy handouts in PD sessions. The first example I have selected to illustrate this theme comes from the instructor's narrative that relates to the importance of communication and collaboration among students in the synchronous class. Dr. Gruen states that clear communication between students is critical. The use of synchronous software augments communication and collaboration in that it permits multiple media to be used for clarifying ideas in her classes. We see how powerful the audio component, the visuals we bring in to illuminate the PowerPoints and the application sharing tool allows us to share a text and even text message in the background. Because technical support personnel is permitted entry into all Illuminate classes and synchronous course sites in Blackboard, it is very important that they know what is happening and also to know what their roles are specifically in relation to the instructor and to the participants in the classroom. The administrator must provide very clear instructions to technical support about their involvement in Illuminate classes, explain clearly what their roles and responsibilities are, and give directions for them in case something unexpectedly happens. For example, there might be situations when the instructor cannot make the session and the tech support is there with the students waiting, and the tech support needs to know what to do after 15 minutes if the instructor doesn't show up, or what they need to do when it comes to system-wide technical problems. So the communication is ongoing between the stakeholders, and as a result of effective collaboration and communication, the conflicts between real-time classes can be minimized, as well as the tension that is very often there when the instructors first go online or the students have their first online sessions are evident. Another important aspect is to synchronize all these sessions with other live events that are taking part on campus, so students have the ability to choose whether they are going to go to the class or there are no other interfering factors that put students into a position to choose between a class or a professional development session or an information session or a workshop. The third theme that we came across was very interesting, and we were very pleased to be able to identify this. It is about the importance of addressing the effective and relational aspects of the system. In the research literature, we didn't really find too much reference to that, but in our everyday life and in our activities and our work, we find that these are very important factors. For example, in courses where synchronous delivery is supplemented by a few synchronous sessions, it is more likely that a stronger sense of community will develop. From the reflection of the instructors, we see that community is often achieved by encouraging casual dialogue at the start of synchronous classes. Students willingly sign in 5 or 10 minutes before the start of the class, just so that they can talk about their families, their life, their work before the formal presentations or the formal activities within the synchronous session begin. Instructors also try to encourage the building of relationships and strengthening of communities by building in components into their asynchronous course environments. Coffee rooms or social rooms are available for students to interact. And when we're talking about the emotional aspects of online learning, we definitely need to address those situations when the emotions are high and there is high level of anxiety and fear from failure that are common amongst new users and the instructors. And with orientation sessions and the opportunities for instructors to try and play with the tools that are available before they go into the real-time classroom are very important support systems that help students and instructors and the stakeholders involved all through these emotions. From the technology support point of view, you see, they really take on a lot when something doesn't go right. If there are audio problems, if the instructor is not there, if students are having or are kicked out from sessions repeatedly, they really have to deal with very frustrated and angry students. And I have to say sometimes even the instructors are very unhappy. So in terms of this technical support team, must remain calm, reassuring, and positive in all times. They need to possess exceptional emotional intelligence in order to react appropriately and effectively. And just very quickly to the very last, I think we got something here. Maybe just a second, please. Okay. And the last result of our thematic analysis was just highlighting the integration of the subsystem into working toward common goal. It is so important that we all share the common understanding of the vision and the mandate, not just of the programs of the specializations, but also how that fits into the vision and mandate of the university and the vision and mandate of our faculty. Three of us, when we wrote our four narratives, felt very strongly that we do have a common goal, which is to create and sustain a strong sense of community and to build a supportive learning environment where students are actively engaged. In addition to knowing who the students are, their age, their gender, learning style, personal characteristics, motivation, their status in the program, their progress, their family situation, it is important to translate that knowledge into the effective use of the synchronous learning tools and to acknowledge that these tools are only the means to achieve our goals. So that would be about the result of thematic analysis, and then over to you, Janet.
I'll just double check if there's any questions or comments on the thematic analysis that Maria presented before I reflect on some of the things that we've learned through the thematic analysis. So I'll just pause for a minute. I have to say I've been enjoying the discussion about providing marks for attendance, yes or no, and I liked Mike's comment about the whole co-construction of knowledge. I'm with you on that, and then also Terry's point about that there's different ways of learning and being within the environment as well too. So taking a look at the whole discussion, I looked at it from a broader picture, and I thought about, so what does this mean in terms of the learning dynamic within our university setting? And I had this image of, you know, back in the old days, I thought if the instructor goes, picks up his books or her books, and then walks over to the class, and the students come in, and then they learn together. But and if you think about it, it's the instructor and the student together. And yet, when I think about the whole synchronous and process, I think that it's much more dynamic in terms of who we all rely on and support on. That it's no longer an independent system, but suddenly as instructors, we need to realize how important it is to work with the program coordinator. We need to look at those systems and the capacity and the fact that maybe there can only be three or four classes that night because there's only a certain amount of capacity within Illuminate. So we need to work with the program coordinator to plan our system and our setting. We also need to work with tech support. I remember the first time when I wanted to break my students out into rooms, and Illuminate didn't support that. I had to do some really creative working with our tech support person in order to make that happen. I'm thinking, boy, this is an incredible amount of work to make this happen, and yet for me as an instructor, in order to make this happen, I needed to work within an interdependent system. And so if you think about it, this is really symptomatic of something bigger that's going on within the university setting. And so if you look at theoretical approaches to how we work within our organizations, there's been a real shift that in the past you could imagine our universities and our workplace settings as giant machines that everybody worked in. They had their own system, and we worked in silos, and we could work fairly away from each other. And yet, if we're starting to shift now to what this means, this online learning environment, we really do need a systems approach. And I think the work by Gareth Morgan and Margaret Wheatley is quite helpful to that we need to look at this quote here, that strategy, structure, technology, and the human and managerial dimensions of an organization are subsystems with living needs that must be mutually satisfied. So you can almost kind of imagine a web, and that we're all connected to each other. In order to animate this, we need to work within that web. It also really struck me as well, too, that there's a real hierarchy of needs that's useful within the system as well, too, that if I think about the learning environment within Illuminate, that if we don't take care of the basic needs in terms of the needs for people to have their sound systems checked, that they can hook on, that they can do all those different kind of basic things, if we don't attend to that quickly, the anxiety level of the learner and the instructor and everybody goes up hugely. But if it's attended to fairly quickly and easily, I find that there's a real shift very quickly to focusing on the learning, that we move into discussion, dialogue, and we're talking about the concepts, and we're building a learning community. And when people talk about a satisfying learning environment within Illuminate, they're not talking about the tech support. But if it's gone, it becomes a huge barrier, and it's what people focus on in terms of being dissatisfied within the learning environment. And so that's absolutely critical, and I know that for students who are new to the online learning environment, that if those issues aren't attended to quickly, it has a tendency to really filter how they perceive online learning, and they somehow find it very hard to get past that barrier to moving into the space of learning. And so you can see within our program, the fact that we have a tech support person within our faculty is really important. I've talked with other faculties, and they need to rely on the central tech support at the University of Calgary. And many of our sessions are in the evening, and yet the tech support is available from 8 a.m. in the morning until 5 p.m. at night. Well, we need the tech support person and the systems in place right there and then so that we can remove those basic barriers to learning so we can move on into the space of learning. And so I'm so aware of the interdependent system that we have here, and that by having it there, it's very, very seamless, and that we can move into these higher order needs and get into the space of learning. So that's really, 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 really huge for me as somebody who teaches within this environment, that if we're stuck at that basic level and we can't move into the space of learning, then I would see this as a huge barrier. But for the most part, for me, I've been so thrilled at how quickly we can move into that learning space. And so, again, as I've emphasized before, I really believe that the synchronous communication does push us into a new way of teaching. And I think for many instructors, until they see that, and until they make that shift, it's a real challenge, I think, to adapt within the system, that being this independent person that can do their lesson plans and open up their room and just work in that space, it's no longer that way, that they really do need to have a whole paradigm shift and working together with other people within that environment. I think that's really, really huge. And then finally, again, the affective component is really important. For the most part, our learners, even though Janet Horwick has talked about the younger generation, right now many of our learners are, the average age is 43 when they're coming in, and they need to adapt to this learning environment. So the quicker we address that, the more we can move into that space. And also for instructors within our program, within the Faculty of Education, most of the instructors that seem to be hired are also people that have a long background but come into this in their 40s, and for many of them, they're still fairly new to this. So again, addressing this and providing a lot of support at the beginning, almost at the elbow coaching for instructors so that they can adapt to this, it helps them move and feel comfortable within this environment fairly quickly. But if we don't provide the support up front, the barriers become really even more challenging. And so as we're starting to step back then, so what are the implications for practice? I think it's really important that there is a program administrator such as Maria Seuss. I remember being down again at the University of South Australia and then also attending a session at Congress in Vancouver and seeing instructors go it alone. And for many of the instructors, they don't have the time and the energy or the interest to do all of this, but they will work and adapt to this if there is somebody that's willing to support them and help them with all those technical issues. Again, the ongoing training and support for everybody is really important. I always appreciate, even right now, as new students are coming into our system in July and September, that our supports have students learn Blackboard and Illuminate so that by the time they come into the class, some of the initial anxiety is gone and they can move into the subject at hand that we're talking about. Again, I think it's instructors receive the support. I think we all know this as people that teach within online, simply transferring what you do within a face-to-face environment to the online environment isn't going to work, and so I think instructors really need a lot of guidance and support around that. Again, the tech support is really, really huge. Having somebody in each of your classes when you do Illuminate is really important, and then after 15 minutes they usually can fade away, but those critical first 15 minutes, much like Lynn Anderson being here to attend to all those tech support things, has allowed us to move into the learning space really, really quickly. Janet Torwick talked about what the boundaries are around the tech support so that they know how to be effective in their support is really, really important, and also to acknowledge that as a tech support person, you're also providing the emotional support as well, too. It's not just the gadgets. And then again, the final component, if we can emphasize that, is that there's a paradigm shift in this, is that there needs to be ongoing communication and support amongst everybody within this. There indeed is a paradigm shift that goes not only with synchronous communication, but asynchronous communication, that unless we collaborate and work effectively together, it's very hard, if pretty much impossible, to create a really effective learning environment. So I'm going to get off the mic and see if there's any questions here. I haven't had a chance to take a look at what's going on within the chat board.
There's actually been a lot going on in the chat box here, as you know, when you weren't talking, and most of it was comments going back and forth. Yeah, and I agree. It's wonderful, Janet. I believe Karima had a question, though, if you can see it there in front of you.
Karima, do you want to just tell me a little bit more about yourself and where that, and just elaborate on the question, because I'd like to know more. Karima, are you there?
I was going to say, Karima is texting, so I'm assuming she doesn't have audio, or he doesn't, sorry.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? I'm going to speak a little louder. Can you hear me now? Okay, great. My name is Karima, and I've been involved in cross-cultural effectiveness training. I do facilitation work, mostly face-to-face, but there is a small online component, so I'm always intrigued, very curious to learn about how other educational institutions, professors, instructors are incorporating the cross-cultural component, whether it's in a face-to-face or online, and I think very importantly in the blended learning environment. So I was wondering what your observations have been within that particular area, just maybe something more explicit, because I find we don't touch on it enough, and I think there are probably more specific strategies that we can consider to support some of these learners who come from diverse cultural backgrounds.
Hi, Karima. I hope that's okay. I ended up taking away your microphone so I could get on. I think in terms of the cross-cultural component. Indeed, it's really important to include this within our content in all of our courses as well too. So whether it's within the face-to-face environment or within the online environment, it's really important to incorporate that. Now, in terms of some of the process aspects, it's been interesting in that I have had cross-cultural students from Taiwan and Dubai and Kosovo, and I think because of the online component, we do have the advantage then that we are able to open up our space to people from a lot of different cultures. And so what happens then within the conversations, instead of talking about cross-cultural experiences in a theoretical component, we actually have students from the different cultures within the synchronous and the asynchronous space. So I remember having students within Kosovo, within both online and sort of the synchronous and asynchronous component. And there's been almost really that ongoing cross-cultural experience going on, simply because when they interpret articles and when they talk about their experience, they bring that experience into the space. And that's been actually, for me, one of the really wonderful, challenging, exciting components then of teaching within this distance learning environment, in that we're not really in a way just teaching about cross-cultural, but we're actually experiencing it because students do come in from a lot of different spaces. On a practical level, it's been a challenge. I know for students from Kosovo and Dubai, we have certainly had to provide other alternatives for them in terms of the synchronous communication, because it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I know for the students with Kosovo, there's been brownouts as well too, so that it's been really inconsistent in terms of them being able to be online. That being said, though, even though I'll provide a different space and they can listen to the recording, it's incredible how often they will try and get on, because they find it so wonderful to actually be able to talk and hear the voices of people within their community. So even at 4 o'clock in the morning, people will still show up, so that they have that chance to actually talk and connect with each other. I also see that in the text here, that there's been all kinds of wonderful references for cross-cultural content as well too. So I will leave that for you to also take note of.
Terry Anderson had a question for Maria. I don't know if you saw it there, Maria. The question was regarding seats and scheduling in Illuminate.
Wonderful question. Since we were among the first users of Illuminate, we always had very good relationships with the company, and we never had problems with limited seat numbers. When we moved to use the Illuminate to the university main IT server system, we have still no restrictions in terms of how many seats we can allocate to courses. So in terms of seat numbers, I don't have to worry at this time. The other aspect I mentioned in this session that I need to worry about are instructors who are teaching more than just one course, not to double book them. Students who are enrolled in more than one course, because we need to make sure that the real-time class sessions do not overlap for these students. And also just to coordinate that TechSupport actually has enough time to sign in each class session and provide good help and support for the first 15-20 minutes, so we try to schedule our classes with all these factors in mind, as well as looking at other activities and Illuminate sessions that might be happening on campus, not to interfere with class activities and class sessions. And just to add to Janet's comment regarding cross-cultural communication and having international students, it's a wonderful opportunity, and from the administration side, it was a totally new experience for us to engage and work with the students, and they were very humbled, very demanding very little from us, and they were very helpful. Whatever they got from us, they didn't care about having live sessions in the middle of the night or just the opportunity to be part of this learning community, to be able to go through the courses with students from other cultures was extremely important for them.
Any other questions? Okay, well, I see that it is 12 o'clock. If you wanted to know a little bit more about our article, this is based on an article that the three of us have written. Here's the actual citation here. So thanks very much, everybody. And again, Lynn, thanks very much for inviting us to be part of this. This is just a really great model of PD.
Well, thank you, Tree, so much for taking the time to share your research with us here, Insider. It's been really informative to hear all the different perspectives coming into this research, and it really offered us a lot of practical advice. And I love some of the interesting points you brought up. You know what? In all the sessions I've been into, I don't think I've ever heard Maslow's hierarchy of needs being applied to online learning, and I love that you made that connection. So it seems so common sense, and yet, like I said, it's the first time I've heard it. So I'm really glad you put that forth. Thank you to everyone who was also able to join us and take time out of your busy schedules. I'm just going to point out our next CIDR session will be about, and this came up today too, about emotion learning and online learning environment. It's going to be presented by Dr. Marty Cleveland Innes, who's with Athabasca University, and Zara Akyol, who is a graduate student right now at the University of Calgary with Dr. Randy Garrison. And anyways, they have been doing a lot of work on, emotion and online learning environments, and they gave a presentation earlier this year where they just touched on it, so I'm eager to hear how this presentation goes. So hopefully you can join us for that, which will be our last presentation for the spring session. So hopefully we'll see you all there. And thank you again, Janet, and Maria.